Welcome to StratCom Live, the podcast for small business and nonprofit marketing.
But we're not talking about marketing today, though. We're talking about StratCom, another element of StratCom. But continue with the beginning of your story here before we start laughing at Deb and being a snake.
Yeah. Dude, that episode was fired.
That was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. We'll include the link to that one, too.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, guys, we're here to help your organization tell your story. That's what we want to do. And so part of telling your story is also, especially if you're a nonprofit, it's going to be in helping you to write a grant. Now, there are grants for businesses as well as nonprofits, but we're going to talk about that. Talk about putting a grant together and what that looks like and really the essentials for grant writing. Those tips for success. And Kelsey, why don't you introduce yourself so that our guests know who you are, and maybe tell me a little bit about some of the grant writing you've done really briefly.
Sure. Okay. So my name is Kelsey Bowden. I am the president and founder of Grand River Agency, and we essentially serve small businesses and small nonprofits with amplifying their message, whatever that might be. So for some small businesses, that is working on their digital marketing and their online presence and social media and things of that nature. It might be the same way for small nonprofits, but there's also the arm of the business that handles exclusively nonprofit fundraising, that handles donor cultivation, that handles those types of communications that go along with building those relationships with grant funders and donors and benefactors. And then there's grant writing itself as a practice, which a lot of nonprofits, I would say, put too many eggs in that basket when it should be a lot, a more holistic approach that encompasses a lot of different StratCom activities. But either way, I am a grant writer by trade. That's that is one of my skill sets, and that began when I started as a grant writer for a small local nonprofit in the healthcare industry. So over the course of my years there, brought in several million dollars in grant funding. A hard lesson learned also is how many grant proposals were failing grant proposal for every grant that was approved. There were probably five or six others that were not. You get used to being told no a lot in that field because it's so competitive. Like 30% is a really, really good success rate. I always equate that to hitting 300, being a 300 hitter in the major leagues. You fail 7 times out of 10 and you're a Hall of Famer. So that's about how competitive that field, that grant writing specifically, can be. But there are some things that you can do before leading up to writing grants, and there are some things that you can do to build relationships that improve your chances, and we're going to get into those today. Now, since starting Grand River Agency, which was originally Southern Tier Communication Strategies, served several nonprofit clients along the way, just given that that was a skill set of mine. You know, so we brought in several big grants, six-figure grants here and there. It wasn't a huge priority of ours, but is something that we're really, really trying to double down on now that we've become Grand River Agency and we've built that capacity to be able to help out our clients that much more. So yeah, that's a little bit in a nutshell, my experience with grant writing, and there's some more insights to be had there. But have you introduced yourself?
No, I haven't. So I'm Josh Hatcher, and I am the Vice President of Client Success at Grand River Agency and one of the co-hosts here at StratCom Live. It's a pretty cool podcast. If you're not subscribed to it yet, make sure that you do.
Because, yeah, you should probably do that.
Because we may have some amazing moments that could have you laughing for hours, like in our last episode when we reviewed Wendy's Twitter account or Facebook account. But aside from all of that, I'm going to see if I can break Kelsey again. That was amazing.
So that was hilarious. Yeah, I almost died laughing.
Now, I actually don't have I do have a lot of experience in serving nonprofits and working with churches and with working with other nonprofits. I've been on the end of a grant where I worked for a nonprofit who had a youth challenge grant, and I used that grant to like basically pay, you know, it paid me to work with kids, and then the grant ended and I lost my job. So like, I know how that goes. Like, you to put all your eggs in the basket of a grant is not quite the way it should work. So we can talk about that in a little bit. But before we do that, it's important for me to ask these couple questions, Kelsey, because these I think are the real important stuff. This is the crux
of what we're trying
like,
to get at.
Like, yeah. really, I mean, the grant stuff, I know that our podcast is titled that. I know that it's really the meat and potatoes in the rest of our episodes, but this is the part that I want to know about because I feel like it helps me get to know you better.
Right.
Like, we can work together and we can know each other, but now I can really know you. I can look into your soul, maybe even share my Netflix account with you.
get off my Netflix, you snake. Oh, poor Deb. Anyway, you had a question for me.
I do. Kelsey, do you have any hidden talents?
Oh, well, I can juggle.
Really?
Which is weird. Yes, I can juggle. And
I've got like some knives and nunchucks here. Do you want to try to juggle?
The more dangerous, the better. If you that's fine, you know. So yeah, if it's something very, very sharp or something that might explode, it might be helpful. No, actually, I haven't in some time, but for a while there, I did a lot of painting. One of my paintings is on the wall behind us, doing a lot of Bob Ross type landscapes and golf courses because I love to golf. So I just challenged myself to learn how to do that. But that was something I wasn't particularly artistic. Aside from music, you know, I can play guitar and piano and stuff enough to at least look like I know what I'm doing. But I wasn't particularly artistic like in high school or in college. And I just found myself with some time one day, probably around 2018. I was, you know, my daughter would have been maybe almost 3 at the time. So this is a little while ago. And I just started watching Bob Ross and I'm like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to try that. So I went out and I bought all the stuff, all the oil paints, the easel and the all of the different accessories. There's 400 million different brushes you have to use. There's different knives that you have to use to, you know, kind of do the icing on the cake for the mountains and stuff like that. Then the happy little trees. So that was something that I just kind of taught myself just from watching that. And I did probably a good 100 paintings or so over the course of a couple of years. Some of them I managed to sell. Most of them ended up being gifts for, you know, Christmas and birthdays and stuff to family members. But they ended up like, you know, my dad is also, you know, he's an avid golfer. So like some of the golf paint, the golf course paintings that I did, you know, I just gave to him and he still has them hanging up in his house. So it's kind of, it's cool. And like Bob Ross said, like anyone can paint. I didn't think that I could, but taught myself to do it. So that's kind of a hidden talent that people know about. So it's not quite so hidden, but maybe people listening don't know about it.
So it's really funny because my hidden talents are also very similar. So I also didn't know that I could paint. I had an art teacher that was very strict and she was trying to teach us technique and I wanted to be creative. And so I didn't gel with her instruction, right? And so I just kind of shifted from art to music. You know, I'm like, I'm not signing up for art again. And but I've been the designer, so I can use the computer to design and do amazing graphics and motion graphics and stuff. And then about a year ago, my wife and I did a date night and we decided we were going to get a painting kit and see what we could, you just know, some let's paint. And I said, I'm going to paint a bear. And so, like, I downloaded an inspiration picture of a grizzly bear. Not the cool bear behind me, if you're watching the podcast rather than listen. It's not that. That my dad got that in the Philippines when he was in the service. But I painted a grizzly bear, and it actually looked good. And I'm like, I can paint. I didn't know I could paint. So I paint animals, and I've had offers to buy them, but I have not, like, I get attached to them. So I haven't sold any or given any away yet. I did give my lion away to my granddaughter who came over, and she looked at it and she was like, oh, it's a lion. And she loved it. So I sent that. That's the only painting I've given away.
Lions are good people.
Lions are good people.
Yeah. That would have been, I would have taken that. I would have bought that from you. I like, lions are cool.
So you said juggling was your other hidden talent. And my other hidden talent is actually making animal balloons, because my dad was a professional clown. And for a little while, so he would do like birthdays and parades and stuff like that. And so for a little while, I did it with him. And then on my own, I did it for a little while when I was broke and needed some money. So yeah, there's a little hidden talent there that I can make animal balloons.
Animal balloons.
And I know how to put on clown makeup.
Like a variety of animal balloons, or just kind of like, are you just like the dog?
So there's 522 different types of animal balloons, and they all look like a dog.
522.
And they all look like dogs.
That's oddly specific. Are you just throwing that number out there?
Throwing that number out there. But you know what the kids want?
There are 637 types.
You want to know what the kids want? The kids want dogs. They want elephants, which is just a dog with a long nose. They want giraffes, which is just a dog, like a long wiener dog. And then you twist the head around and his head and front legs become his tail and back legs and the top head. It's just a wiener dog with a twist. And they want, the little boys want swords and the little girls want flowers. That's all I ever had to make. I didn't have to learn anything else. I can make a little like chihuahua. My dad could make everything. He was the perfect clown. And like, I would come home
from school. I could make a snake.
I would come home from school and the whole house would be filled full of balloons because he was practicing that day.
That sounds amazing. It was amazing. I love clowns. Amazing. Clowns to me are awesome.
My daughter is actually doing it now. My oldest daughter decided she's going to carry on the family tradition and she's become a clown. She just did the Mount Jewett Swedish festival. And then she did some other festival too, and just made animal balloons all day. And
so I knew that you, you know, had been a clown before. Were you the type of clown who like had the weird voice, like the hey kids, like that type thing? Or
no? So no. So because my dad did it like almost like really my entire life. Like he had time to kind of learn what works and what doesn't. So I literally learned from a master clown.
Yeah.
Like he was so good at it. Like he learned if your costume is bright blue or if you have a lot of bright blue on your face, it's scary to babies. And like,
okay.
Like, you know, like a lot of clowns will do the complete white face, you know, and he's like, don't do that.
Isn't the point to scare the children?
No, the point is not to scare the children. Okay. He's like, so like we did what's called an auguste clown face, which is just like, the white is maybe around the eyes and maybe around the mouth, but like your flesh tone is showing through.
Right.
And so like, I actually got to the place where when I was doing it myself, I would need to be able to, like go from one thing to the other quickly. So I would just put white on my eyebrows and red on my bottom lip. That was the only makeup I would wear.
Oh, really?
And then I had a round nose, you know, and then the costume. So that way I could, like, if I had to go from one place to the other really quick, I could just stop in a gas station bathroom. I'd go in as a clown and I'd come out as Josh. Right. It was great.
Right.
Anyway, that's my crazy, crazy hidden talent.
Hidden talent. What else did we have here?
What's the most interesting place you've ever visited, Kelsey?
Ooh, that would be probably St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Me and some buddies that I went to college with, we went down there for spring break. Would have been like, I think my junior year of college. And it was my first time being in the Caribbean. And it was just like the water so clear and beautiful. And oh man, it was just so cool. But I mean, the culture, even though it's a U.S. territory, the culture itself is very, very traditional the way that it was, you know, a more of an ethnic type flair. It's almost like there's goats in the street, you know, that sort of thing. So it was almost like kind of like a culture shock to. I mean, because there's like very, very nice places, the affluent, like touristy places or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's also like, this is what it's actually like to live here.
Right.
In St. John, you know? So yeah, that was very cool. I can't really, it was spring break. I don't remember too much of it other than just being there, honestly, and being in the water and, you know, we party on the beach. And my friend Joey, he still, as far as I know, he lives down there. He's from St. John. So we stayed with him. So that was kind of like we had a, you know, a host and someone to guide us around. And he's also a boat captain. So we'd get out on his boat and everything, too. So that was kind of cool. Yeah, that was my place. What about you?
So I'm going to answer half of the story because it answers this question. And I think the second half of the story answers another question on another episode that we'll probably ask. So the most interesting place I've ever visited would have to be Casablanca in Morocco.
Wow. Okay. You blew me out of the water.
Yeah. So I went on a mission trip to Guinea, West Africa, which is probably the most adventurous thing I've ever done. And I'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But on another episode. But the most interesting place I've ever visited was definitely Casablanca. And so what happened is we had a 14-hour layover. We had like a 14-hour flight and a 14-hour layover. And instead of like finding a hotel room and sleeping or sleeping in the airport, we just went out and like, we're in a new country. We're going to explore. Mm-hmm. And we'd met this girl on the plane that spoke French, which we needed so we could find our way around. And she was like, yeah, I'll take you around. And so like, so Morocco is Northern Africa. So that's more Arab influenced. Right.
Right.
And like, I mean, you know, it's a lot like Egypt, but it was cold. It was surprisingly chilly. I mean, it was February and you know, we were farther north, I think, than I envisioned that we were. And so it was chilly, you know, and I didn't wear a jacket because I didn't think I would need one and I needed one.
Yeah.
But like just going to all the shops and like we rode the train out and like you'd ride the train out and you'd look and like there's like this old building that looks like it's been bombed out.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made a teepee on top with a tarp and they have a nice truck outside with a satellite dish. And they're like living in this bombed out building with satellite TV and a nice pickup truck.
That's crazy.
But it's got a teepee roof.
Right.
You know? And like, you know, but it was like a very different culture than where I'm coming from. And then obviously the rest of the trip when we were in West Africa was also a very adventurous and interesting culture. So it was just so much different.
Right.
But it was really neat just kind of walking around and exploring and meeting people and talking to them and, you know, going to the little Moroccan bakery and, yeah, it was a cool experience. It was right. Just 14 hours. I was only there just on a layover, but it was like one of those things that sticks with you forever.
Right. That's fantastic. I didn't know you did that. I learned something new about you every day.
Same here.
And I've known you for a while now.
That's why this is fun.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so what are we talking about again? Grant writing.
Grant That's writing, right. Man.
Oh, okay. So I feel most appropriate place to start is what you do before you write a grant proposal. So if you were to guess, Josh, what would be your first step? Just curious. If you were going to write a grant proposal, what's the first thing that you would try to do?
Well, the first thing I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to find a grant because I know nothing about grant writing.
Right.
And so like,
you do need to find the grant first if you're going to go for it. Yeah.
Right. like I don't like, I'm at like, cause you remember when we were kids, that Matthew Lasco guy or whatever that had like, he would like show up on like late night.
I'm not sure that I remember.
Oh yeah, I'm right. I'm a lot older than you. So it was this guy. I think he's still out there, but there's this guy and he would show up and he wore like this crazy zany suit and his hair was all spiky and he'd be like, ah! And like, and he was like, I know where there's money. And he would tell you how to be like, you want to start a small business? There's a grant for that. And he would just go through and tell you about all the places there are grants. And then for like 1995.
He sounds like the last person I would want to listen to. That's more frightening than anything. I don't care.
Dude, I've got to find it and show you like Matthew Lasco or it might be Lesko. I don't remember. I just like, it was like a little leprechaun dude. Like, he was just small and tiny and weird.
Pot
and he was
gold.
And he would advertise. And it was like, you call in the 800 number and you spend $19.95 and he'll send you his book that has like all of the grants that were available. Right. And then like every year he would come out with a new edition and it was all the grants and things like that for whatever, you know, you want to put an addition on your house? Ah, I've got a grant for that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah.
Well,
so
there are, fortunately, there are a lot of great places to search for grant opportunities. I don't prefer to go this route because I really, really, really prefer not to pursue like government grants because they're a huge process. Now, if they're necessary, absolutely. Let's spend some time on that, you know, but I prefer to work with like foundations and charitable trusts because the process I find is so much more friendly. So, they're willing to work with you. It's not just like throwing out some money to some government bureaucracy and just hoping that they're going to, you know, maybe they'll contact you someday if you get funded, that sort of thing. When you're working with foundations, they're typically you're assigned some sort of a grant manager or what have you. You're able to reach out and ask questions, and they're willing and actually quite happy to guide you through the process. So again, if you're going to go for like government grants, that's awesome. You can go to grants.gov and they're posting things every day. That's federal grants. Or for me, I'm in New York State. The New York State Grants Gateway, they also, you know, they promote the different grants that they have going on through the state at that level. Most other states also have their own various versions of like the Grants Gateway. So you have like Pennsylvania State Grants or West Virginia State Grants or what have you. So yeah, those are good places to start if you're looking for, you know, something to like, oh, we should probably go for this grant. This grant is for, you know, providing education to mothers who have health issues or something. I'm just throwing something out there. But in working primarily with foundations and charitable trusts, I prefer to use my GrantStation membership. And GrantStation is a part of the Grant Professionals Association, of which I'm a member. And GrantStation is basically an online database of pretty much any grant resource in the world. And you can break it down by different types of grants and different types of priorities and different focus areas and different, you know, from $0 to $5,000 or $10,000 to whatever, or over 50,000 or over $1 million. You can break it down by different denominations of whatever you're basically looking for. So if you highlight, let's just say you highlight 20 applicable grant processes, which is basically highlighting 20 applicable grant sources, then you're getting into the research side of things, because you don't want to just throw out, as much as we stress producing a volume of grant proposals to enhance your chances of funding. So, I mean, like if you're really looking for $75,000 for this thing, you stand more of a chance of winning that $75,000 if you put out 5 applications for it in 5 different places, instead of just putting out one and praying that that one gets funded. That said, you don't want to just throw out applications to the wind to see what sticks, you know, because that's just going to be a wasted time and resources on your part. And you end up a lot of time with egg on your face. Right. Yeah. If you're not coming through and not being funded. So, a good place to research funders to figure out exactly what they're about. I mean, typically first thing you would do, just like if you submit an application, one of the first things that they're going to do is look at your digital presence. They're going to look at your organization's website. They're going to look at your social media, which is why we stress so strongly. We stress solidifying your nonprofit organization's marketing and digital presence as well. But it's helpful to go check out their website. They often have, you know, among the different pages, they have past projects that they funded, different organizations that they prefer to work with. So, I mean, you get a really good feel for, you know, what their priorities are, because you want your grant proposal to match their priorities. You want your mission to match their mission. If it doesn't match, even in the tiniest bit, you're not going to get funded. You know,
I think of an example of that. I was talking to a good friend of mine who helps with a crisis pregnancy care center in town. So mm-hmm. It's like you know, for anybody that doesn't know what that is, it's like the opposite of Planned Parenthood, but they're still serving the same people. They're just helping them in a different way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So their goal is saying, look, we want to help you to be able to raise and take care of this baby. Right. Which I think no matter what you believe, both of those should be good. Or you know what I mean? Like you should, let me say that differently. I think that that is a good alternative and option for those who want that. Right. And so, but their goal isn't fighting abortion. Their goal is helping mothers. Right.
Right.
So, but the problem is, so they were looking at grants, but all of the grants had things that went against their values, you know? So right. like the grant, in order to do this, you had to compromise over here. And they're like, I can't do that because that goes against what we stand for as an organization, you know? And so sometimes there are some grants that are just not a good fit. Because now if it's something that you're willing to compromise on, you know, like, okay, well, you know what? We're not big on the meeting this need, but I think we could do that. And it seems like that might be something that could work for us.
You don't want to get into mission creep either.
Right.
You know, yeah. Right. I mean, like there's something to be said for that, but you don't want to get into like, okay, well there's this $50,000 that's available for this thing that is tangentially related to what we do as an organization, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just like, it might be a little bit of a stretch and you'd have to do something different from what you would normally do. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to steer clear because they're looking at people who can demonstrate past success in that particular endeavor, you know? So your chances of being funded for that in the first place, if you're kind of stretching what your mission does, they're going to see that. The grant reviewers are going to see that and they're going to flag that and be like, No, there are others who more specifically match that. But that said, I'm not saying that I disagree with you yeah, you want to steer clear of mission creep a little bit.
That's why I'm kind of bringing it up because I don't know much about it.
Right.
And you're the guy that knows about it. So that helps me understand it better. So.
Yeah. That is one of my roles here primarily is managing this side of things. So,
right. Yeah. Sure. Well, and that, like I can help with things like increasing your digital presence, helping you tell your story of what you do.
Sure.
Like that end of it. And then
that's so important though. That's something. And when I had that presentation with the nonprofit the other day, you know, presented to their board about this whole process, they were primarily interested at first in just grant writing as an activity and, you know, making an investment in grant writing as a capacity building exercise for them. You know, it's something they need to do. But I was like, the first question I asked them was, what do you guys think of your digital presence? And it's the board of directors in there and it was crickets, you know, because there was just something that it's not something that they prioritize. They don't have somebody in place who does that.
And they're busy in their mind, serving the needs of the people that they serve.
Exactly.
Which is important. Yeah. That's why you're doing it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But if you haven't taken the time to communicate and show and prove what you do, then first of all, not only you're not going to be able to appeal to grant funders, right? But you're also not going to appeal to other donors as well, because they get a thrill out of seeing that what they're giving to you is helping people.
Yeah.
That's why that digital presence is so important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So like the wealthy benefactor who will look you up. And for the most part, I mean, you know, you might have that 97-year-old person who, but even that 97-year-old person might be digitally savvy.
My 97-year-old friend up the road is on Facebook.
Yeah, so. That might be very tech savvy. Right. So you can't say for a fact that that person is not going to be looking up your digital presence. But back to what I was saying, though, they were interested, this board of directors I was speaking to the other day, they were primarily interested in grant writing as a sustainability exercise, as a capacity building exercise. And I asked them about their digital presence and it's just like the grant writing is just a part of it. Mm-hmm. It's one cog in the wheel, in the nonprofit fundraising wheel. And some things aren't directly related. You're not going to see a direct return on investment from some of those activities. But anyway, grant writing is just one cog there. So as you're researching these funders to see if you can have these aligning priorities, to see if you can put together some sort of a proposal that says that, hey, our missions are serving the same purpose here. You know, you still want to dig a little bit deeper. A good place to look is their IRS 990s. All of any charitable enterprise, any tax exempt enterprise is going to have to file a 990. And that's just basically a form, their financials. As a tax exempt organization, it's their financials that say, here's our board of directors. Another important thing to know who their board of directors or board of trustees is, and the different projects that they have funded and the sources of those funding over the last calendar year, or the year that they are filing for. So you can, while their website, like I said, if you're going to their website and you see some of the projects they funded in the past, and that all looks well and good, but a lot of times they're not going to put all of the projects that they've ever funded. They're just going to hit some key highlights. So if you're looking at their 990, you can see that maybe that they did give a smaller grant, like we'll say like a $5,000 grant to the local soup kitchen or something like that, that you wouldn't have seen before. Without looking at the 990, that's why it's so important to look, to dig a little bit deeper, see exactly what they funded, exactly how much, and what it was going toward. It'll tell you exactly what it was for, so you can develop your proposal from that. And another big part I had mentioned, trying to figure out who the foundation or the grant funding organizations, who their board of trustees or their board of directors are. So you can reach out and you can start building relationships, because it's so much easier to submit and to win a grant application if you've been asked to submit that grant application. Because, you know, any grant process out there, they could be receiving hundreds or thousands of grant applications. They're not reading anywhere close to that many. You know, they're going to go through and they're going to pick and choose the ones they're going to prioritize, the ones that they have officially sanctioned for themselves. Like, they know that XYZ organization is submitting this grant proposal for this process because they worked with you through that process. They want to read that proposal. They might try to go through and see if there's any organizations that they might recognize in one way or another, just because your organization has some clout in whatever industry you serve or whatever purpose or community need you serve. They might look for that, but it's very important to know who the board of directors is, reach out and try to figure out what their purpose for being on the board of directors is. Why are they there? What are their philanthropic priorities? And they're oftentimes very, very willing to walk you through exactly what they want to see that aligns with those philanthropic priorities. So yeah, that's a big part before you even sit down to write, is just try to figure out through this research, should I even be writing this proposal in the first place? If not, and the chances are, the answer to that question is often no. You need to move on and find something else. When you do research your funder and you identify a grant process that seems to be quite friendly to you, then you're really, really, and this just goes without saying, I guess, you really, really want to pay attention to the RFP, the request for proposals. You want to pay attention. They have their stipulations for how this grant is supposed to be written and the questions that you're supposed to answer for a reason. It's because they want to know those things. Now, some may have, I mean, nowadays, most grants are submitted online through different foundations. They have digital portals. So you're basically just like taking the answers and putting them in a box and clicking submit, you know, that sort of thing. But I mean, there are some who still would prefer to see, even if it's in digital format, you know, in a PDF version or something like that, they want to see like an actual grant proposal that is formatted as a grant proposal with specific margins, specific font sizes and types and how things, the order of how the proposal is supposed to be laid out. Because quite often when they have larger grant proposals, they are, you know, one person or a group of people is reviewing Section A, you know, the executive summary and the main narrative or what have you. And then you have other people that are going through section B, and then other people that are going through just the financials of it. So, I mean, they split it up and they, you know, they attack it that way. So I just want to be very, very sure before you sit down and write that you have every idea of exactly how these questions are being asked, exactly how they want the information to be presented, and then exactly how they want it formatted and all of that stuff. You're sitting down, and probably the best way to go through exactly how to write a grant proposal itself, we have a blog up on that, so we can post the link to that specific blog so you know the individual parts of a grant proposal that you need to be aware of and that you need to be prepared for when putting together grant packages like that. So we'll put the link
in the show notes.
Yeah, in the show notes, and make sure that you have that. So the next, I guess, biggest thing, and this is huge with grant processes today, because a lot of foundations like to see collaboration on grant projects. They don't like to see nonprofits going it alone. They like to see nonprofit organizations teaming up with other nonprofits and for-profits and governments and other community organizations, what have you. They like to see groups of organizations coming together to serve a need, because the way that they figure the way that that works is that each organization in this grant project serves a role in a continuum of services. So your first nonprofit is where, like, for, I'm just throwing something out there as an example, but your first nonprofit is going to be the nonprofit that makes contact, that makes first contact, in whatever way that's going to be, with the individuals or systems that are served. And then those individuals or systems that are being served are being pushed through this continuum of services. In healthcare, it's a continuum of care. So you may have, you know, some sort of a liaison with a primary care physician that is going to point you toward resources for breastfeeding or something like that, or any other field there. So there's just going to be pushing people through this continuum of services where everything is very, very streamlined and there's not too much burden on one organization. So that said, before you sit down and write your grant proposal, you already want to have your memoranda of understanding signed. You know, they want to see that this group, or letters of commitment or service contracts, if it has to go that far, they want to see something in writing that says X organization is 100% going to be, if funded, is 100% going to be working with Y organization, and they're going to be performing these specific tasks. They want to see that is there. And if there's anything, you know, in some grants, there's match funding, you know, you kind of have to pay to play. Yeah, you pay up front, you know, you might have to put up $10,000 of your own funding, you know, in order to receive another $10,000 from them. So you want to have all of those, the match funding agreements, you want to have all of that stuff in place before you even sit down to write. Because if you don't have that there, you're not going to get the money in the first place, and you just wasted a lot of time. So another thing is developing... before sitting down to write, is developing some sort of an internal grant timeline or a calendar, you know, something like that, something to keep you organized, even if it's just you, because for a lot of smaller nonprofit organizations, it is just like, it's the executive director, right? Writing all of the grants, or it's maybe even a board member who is serving on a volunteer basis, who is just, you know, trying to write grant proposals as they can over the course of a year, just donating their time. Sometimes it's a lower level staff member that's just tasked with writing grant proposals because, hey, that's just a part of your day today. You know, we need funding for this. Some organizations do hire a full-time grant writer. Now that can, you know, be cost prohibitive, which is why we exist, to do these sorts of things on a contract basis. But yeah, have some sort of a calendar of events, of exactly what you're going to do, a time when you're going to, perhaps a date by which you're going to have a review and an update of your organization's strategic plan that needs to be submitted with the grant proposal. So you need to have that, you know, let's just say by August 25th. And then by, you know, around the same time frame, maybe by the 26th, you want to have your letters of support and letters of intent and letters of collaboration and memoranda of those documents that I was just alluding to a little bit ago. Maybe you want to have them by the 26th, you know, and then any information that you might want to have on other organizations you're working with or contractors or other people that you're bringing into the fold. So you have all of that like legal documentation in place. Maybe you want to have all of that by the 27th, you know, like just to keep methodically going down your checklist of things that need to be done. So, and other, you know, by that token, if when you're finally sitting down to write your grant narrative and go through your objectives and goals and how you're going to be doing things, you know, you want to have a draft by the 28th. You want to have that reviewed by the team. If you have a team, you want to have that reviewed by the 29th. You want to have another draft by the 1st. And then you have your final date where you're going to be kicking it out the door and you're going to be submitting it. All of these things, you want to have all of that spelled out so you're meeting these steps in time. Because even if you have a month to write a grant proposal, that goes so quickly. And if you're not meeting these little steps, these 100 little things that need to be done along the way, then you're setting yourself behind, or you're falling at risk of not submitting on time. And there's no excuse for that. If you're not submitting on time, many grant applications, they want that application submitted by 4:30 p.m. Friday this date. If it's not, the online portal even closes. Yeah, you don't even have a chance to do that. But if by chance you know, have a application where you have to send in like a hard copy or what have you, if that email isn't sent or it isn't postmarked by that date, it will not even be reviewed. So yeah, there is a lot to consider, and even more than that to consider. And like I said, we'll include the link in the show notes, with more of the individual steps that need to happen along the way.
So Kelsey, I know that we've talked a little bit about this. I know that like a lot of grants that you write and you submit and, there's some accountability to make sure that you did with the money what you were supposed to do, that there's a reporting element. What does that look like?
Also different based on the source of the funding. You know, some of them may only request that within the next 6 months that you submit some sort of an update to them, like a one-page document that says, you know, in the last 6 months, we've been able to serve X number of people with X number of services, and this is the nature of the services, and it's very, very simple. They're happy to receive that. Some like to see more. If you have a larger grant proposal that has, you know, 25, 30 different deliverables along the way, that has a lot of different goals and objectives, they're going to want to see that all of those goals and objectives are met and what those numbers are. So that might come in like a form that you have to fill out, or you can, you know, depending on the format that the funder wants, or it could be a written document that just kind of spells out in narrative form what those, like, we've served this many people, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's a lot to explain in that regard, you know. But yeah, just that you going down their checklist, you said you were going to do this, and then 6 months into this grant project, how close are you to this number? And then the next thing down, you said you were going to do this. 6 months into it, how close are you to that number? Have you met or surpassed it? If not, why? You know, and if you're not meeting it, you know, how do you intend on remedying that? So yeah, it just depends. It depends on the grant source, exactly what they're going to be looking for in terms of reporting. But for the most part, you're always going to have some reporting element, unless it's a very small grant. You might. I mean, sometimes you have to submit, because a big thing with grant projects is publicity and community outreach. Mm-hmm. So they're going to want to see proof that you've been featured in the local media. So you could send a link to when you were featured on the local news channel or newspaper articles or things like that. But that's another big part of it as well. So they just want to see proof that you're doing what you said you're going to do.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to give thousands of dollars to somebody or tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars to somebody and then not know what they did with it.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you're getting into the $100,000 realm, $100,000, $1 million grants, things like that, I mean, you might have 150 deliverables that you have to meet, you know, and they want it. They will have, there will be a checklist. Where are you on every single one of these things?
I bought a Maserati, went golfing,
went golfing with it. Oh yeah. I mean, and they're going to want to see the finances too. I mean, mm-hmm. not just the deliverables. They're going to want to see the bank receipts, bank notes, whatever. If there's like, checks that have been, you know, sent in to pay for something, they want to see receipts. Mm-hmm. They want to see all of that.
Well, and they should. That's that, oh, that yeah. accountability factor that gets added in.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So we've talked about, and kind of the perspective on this up to this point is if I'm doing this myself, right? Let's say I want to hire a grant writer to help me with this. What should I be expecting?
You want to hire a grant writer, like an internal grant writer, or you want to like contract?
No, like I want to hire Kelsey Bowden, grant writer you know what I mean?
Aficionado.
Extraordinaire.
Aficionaire.
Both together. That's why I'm not writing the grants, because then be like, yeah. What the heck is a fish in air?
Well, if you are looking to contract with grant writing services like this, first off, I mean, like, you're going to expect a lot of, if not all of, what you would expect from an in-house person who is devoted to grant writing. Your in-house grant writer, your in-house fund developer. So you're going to be expecting someone who is going to be putting in the research to find the applicable funding opportunities and who is... can present those funding opportunities to you as the executive director, as the C-level executive of this nonprofit. You're a very busy person, assuming. So present those opportunities to you in a way that's very succinct, that spells out the details of the grant opportunity, when it's due, what its priorities are, how it aligns with your mission. So you could look at that and the decision maker at the nonprofit can just look at that document. Cause I just send a one pager. It's a notice of funding opportunity. It's one page and it spells out all of that stuff in addition to how it's submitted and the reporting requirements and everything like that. That tool allows busy people to make a decision very quickly. Yes. No. Are we going for this? If so, how, you know, so that sort of communication as far as reporting on those opportunities, so you get the ball rolling and you determine the funding opportunities that you're going for. So you should definitely expect that someone to be basically leaving no stone unturned, also trying to find funding sources in different places, because a lot of organizations, and I found this when I was talking to the board of this other nonprofit that I was just mentioning, they go for like the same 12 grants every year, you know, and there are in some instances that's okay. I mean, because the foundations that they've been working with have been happy to work. They've been working with them for 50 years, you know, so they're happy to have that. But in just focusing on those areas, there are some funders that they won't fund you twice. Or if they do fund you, it's going to be X number of years until they fund you again. They want to be able to get to other organizations. So, I mean, just putting all of your eggs into just like the same 12 funders that's like an exercise almost in futility. Like eventually that strategy is going to fail. You might have relationships with these funders now, but no one says that that's going to continue next year.
Right.
You know? So you want someone who's, like I said, is going to leave no stone unturned in trying to find those other funding sources. If looking through GrantStation, you might find that there is, if you are a healthcare organization or a private Catholic school, you know, like one of our clients that we've had before, you might find some sort of charitable trust that is established in someone's name in Gary, Indiana, that prioritizes Catholic education or prioritizes parochial, just Christian schooling, or, you know, or specifically music at private schools or art at private schools. Like, you know, so you might find that in, if you didn't have someone there to be turning over those stones, you'd never know, even know that that organization or that charitable trust or that foundation exists. So you need to have someone who can do that. And then you need to have someone who has the writing capabilities to be able to put together a large grant proposal package. I mean, some grants are, you know, they might be small. They might just be several pages. Some might be several hundred pages. So you need someone who is capable of writing that volume of content, taking existing grant proposals and using them to kind of inform the direction of, you know, where your organization is, your organizational history and where you're going, you know, and also write enough new content, enough new grant narrative, essentially expressing what you're going to do with that grant. In addition to being able to handle all of the different supplementary documentation and stuff like that. But you find that if you're going to hire a full-time grant writer, you might be paying that grant writer, you know, $60,000-$70,000 a year plus benefits, that sort of thing. And if you contract with an agency like us, we have a team of people that are devoted to these tasks, and you're paying a fraction of the cost. Right. So you're building that capacity at a fraction of the cost. Right. There's our selling point, folks.
Right. Well, and you're also looking at, you know, you could look at, okay, we don't need someone to do all of these, but we need someone to do maybe this portion of these.
Sure.
Whereas that's a lot cheaper than, because it's hard to find someone that wants to do it part-time mm-hmm. for you, you know, and that's the advantage of working with a company like us is like, all right, we can do this full-time for you,
mm-hmm.
but maybe you just need a little bit less. We can also help you with that.
Oh, sure.
Which is an advantage
mm-hmm.
because we're pooling our resources together. So.
Yeah. I mean, like if you have a definitive grant strategy and you have these 12 grants or so, I'm just throwing a number out there just because there's 12 months in a mm-hmm. year. You have these 12 grants that you're going for over the course of a year. You know what you're doing. Maybe that's not a full-time workload, you
right,
know?
Right.
So yeah, we could develop a package that would be, you know, that would align with what that need is,
right?
You know, the scope of that need, I should say.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key, like really every project, whether we're talking a marketing project or a grant project or everything else is like our scope, you know, we can, you can hire somebody to do this for you and you're going to pay a $60,000 to $70,000 salary plus benefits and relocation costs and mm-hmm. workman's comp and all of those things. Or
It might even be more if you're hiring like a fund developer,
right?
Who is not just in charge of the grant, like the grant writing or whatever, but someone who is actually like a donor liaison,
right?
You might be paying that person six figures,
right?
Plus benefits to do something like that. I mean, there's a very, very good chance that is essentially a C-level job.
And if you've got a smaller organization that can't sustain that yet,
mm-hmm.
that's where working with somebody like Grand River Agency would be a really good fit for you.
Correct.
Because we can say, all right, where are you at?
Mm-hmm.
And there might be some people that we can't help. That might just be the case with some people.
Sure. You
know? But I think a large majority of even smaller nonprofits might say, all right, I think we can work with this, you know, and we can find a good place to fit you.
Right.
You know, I think so. I think it's worth looking into
yeah.
rather than struggling to do it yourself and failing over and over again. You know, work with somebody who's got a proven track record. And Kelsey is he's got a proven track record.
Yeah. Grant guru
for sure. Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Which is funny because like who would have thought that, right? Like when we met each other
mm-hmm.
and like we were starting to develop the different skills that we were going to use and other things, who would have said, this is your hidden talent.
Right. Well, I guess that could have been one of my hidden talents. It only came because, I mean, like grant writing in its essence is just following directions. Mm-hmm. So much of it. People have a hard time following directions.
Yes.
And some people don't even read the directions, you know, right. As someone who's put together more than one futon, just doing it myself without looking at anything, You know, there's some people
who, I think they go together easier than they come apart.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of it's just, you know, following directions, but there's a way that it needs to be done in a way that needs to be done right, mm-hmm. you know, and you need to have that writing capability to express things, you know, in a way that are understandable and agreeable mm-hmm. to the grant funders as well. And I mean, like, I wish I could think of an example of this. Remember when I was telling you that this morning, my cousin, who is a school nurse, she had me looking over a document that she had to write, just a 2-page document for the school superintendent, the district mm-hmm. superintendent, about her job description, which she did fine. She's not a writer mm-hmm. or anything. She did fine. She expressed what she does. But I mean, even misplaced commas change the meaning of things. And if that were to be,
which is, by the way, is why I like the Oxford comma, because yeah, it has so much clarity.
I know you do. I know you do. You're so, and you're right. I'm not going to fight you on that. I am not going to fight you on that.
That's all right.
Go no.
On. No, but a misplaced comma. Yeah.
Yeah. Misplaced comma or some sort of a syntax error.
Yeah. It you can know? Change the whole meaning of
grammar. It changes the meaning of things. It changes the comprehension mm-hmm. of things. And I remember thinking, and I was going to bring this up because I knew we were going to be talking about this today, that if that were to be submitted as a part of a grant proposal, if her job description, which can be submitted as supplementary documentation in a grant proposal, mm-hmm. if that's being submitted and it's something is unclear, a lot of times they're not going to call you to follow up for clarity.
Right.
They're going to throw it out.
Right.
Because they don't have time to follow up for clarity. They're going to find the next thing that doesn't require following up for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean and that doesn't mean that she did a bad job with it. Again, it just means that, you know, sometimes you need to have someone with a little more writing craft to make sure that it is as clear as it could possibly be what the intentions of your grant narrative are and your deliverables are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, hey man, let's tell our guests, you know, if you guys want to connect with us about writing grants for you and helping you with that process, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to open up your web browser and you're going to want to go up to the top little bar. You're going to want to type in grandriver.agency because.
See how clear that was?
Yeah, it was very clear instructions.
Very clear instructions.
And I'm not trying to talk to you like you're not capable of that. Just making sure that you understand what the instructions are.
Right.
And you go and you click on grant writing and we're going to give you resources there. We're going to keep giving new resources. Whenever we come up with a blog post or something that we can help you learn, we're going to help, first of all, help you learn about the process, mm-hmm. but we're also going to be able to help you. So if you just send us a message and say, hey, look, I've got this nonprofit and we've been exploring grants and we think these might be a good fit. We need some help. We're going to help you. Mm-hmm. So get in touch with us and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you mention stratcom.live too as part of that?
Yeah. Well, and yeah, stratcom.live is our website for the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we also have, like, when we come across anything that's going to be relevant to small business and nonprofits and marketing, which would include grant writing in there, we're going to be sharing those things. And so there are things.
Lots of educational content. Lots of enlightenment.
And like, I really feel like a nonprofit executive director or assistant, you know, that's listening to this really feels like this was really helpful. That's because we want to be able to help you. That's sure. what we want to do.
Sure.
And yes, we want to work for you and we want you to pay us money. But at the end of the day, if we helped you by sharing our stories of what we've been able to do and what we've learned, that's just as important to us. So that's why we do what we do here.
Right. And the return on investment is usually so, so profound as mm-hmm. well. Because you're talking about, like, you know, a minimal investment, especially compared to what you would be paying a full-time grant writer, as I said before, mm-hmm. or full-time fund developer. excuse me. The return on investment. I mean, like, there's never any guarantees, but usually within the first year, you're going to see that six-figure grant. Mm-hmm. You're going to see that first six-figure grant that more than pays for that compensation and then some.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I mean, and that's just one, get another $50,000 grant in there, get another $25,000 grant in there, get another $200,000 grant in there. All of a sudden you got a pretty big budget,
Right. Which means that you can help more people.
Yep. That's just amplify your mission by amplifying your message.
Oh, I love it. Oh, so I'm going to tell you a quick fun story.
You have another fun story.
I know. I love telling you. We both have. This is honestly my favorite part. So I'm a 15-year-old kid, and I'm working at the radio station in Countersport. We've talked about that before. WFRM Radio, Farm and Home Broadcasting. And my job late in the evenings was manning the Pirates baseball games.
Yeah.
And so this was back in the day when it was not digital. So I had, like, we called them carts because it was short for cartridge, but it was basically an 8-track tape. And the 8-track tape worked by, you could record your commercial on it, and when you hit stop, it would put a little tone in it that would tell the machine to stop. And then you could record another one. And so you could load up several commercials on one cart. You know, that was what I was doing.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So they would say, we're going to throw it back to our stations for a commercial break. And I had to be paying attention, because if I was in the bathroom and I missed a commercial break, I would be in trouble. You know, pay attention. So I'd sit there and I'd click play on all the commercial breaks, you know, in between. And there's some other stuff I had to do, but that was most of it. So I'm sitting there and it's like late in the evening and this guy comes in and I usually lock the door, you know, but I kind of like, you know, when people would stop in and visit me. So this guy comes in and he looks like a regular guy. He's wearing a baseball hat. It wasn't a Pirates hat. had a polo on and he sits down. He's got a deep voice, you know,
yeah,
big hands, big guy, big hands, like meat hook hands. And he shakes my hand. And he says, yeah, is the boss here? Basically. I mean, he said her name, but you know, she here. And I said, no, she's not. He goes, oh, well, we're supposed to meet. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. I can call her if you want. Yeah. Could you do that? So I called and left her a message on her answering machine and just kind of, he said, do you mind if I just hang out and wait for her to get back for a little bit? And I said, yeah, that's fine. So we sat there and we shot the breeze and we talked about the Pirates and we talked about baseball in general. And we talked about what I liked to do in school. He asked me a whole bunch of questions, you know, and I'm talking to him and he's telling me a lot of like very personal things in this conversation. And I'm going to say it was half of the game before I finally heard back from Jerry. And she was like, I'm going to be right there. You tell Mr. Ridge that I'll be right there. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, I just told her Tom was here to see her, you know, because that's what he said his name was.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about.
So we've listened to almost the entire baseball game before she comes in and takes him into the other studio. And when she comes in, and that's when she introduced him to me as Governor Tom Ridge of Pennsylvania.
You're sitting there shooting the breeze with the governor, right?
Yeah, like he was a friend. Like we were just talking about all kinds of stuff, you know?
Right.
I mean, I was 15. I didn't know any better. But what I loved about it and I loved about him is that he didn't care that he actually liked that I didn't know who he was.
Right.
Like I did not make the connection. He just got to be incognito for a moment, you know?
Right.
I just love that moment. I love that story. And I thought it was just worth sharing.
Right. Oh, that's fantastic.
Just one of those cool journalism kind of moments that, you know, happened in my life that I got to, you know, listen to the Pirates game and shoot the poop with Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge.
Well, do you remember? Okay. So this is in New York and this would have been, God, what year? Like 2012, when Rob Astorino was running for governor of New York.
I don't remember that one.
No. Okay. Yeah. Nice guy. I went out and covered an event that it was an event at the Angelica, like Rod and Gun Club. And like, I was there, you know, I was there covering the event or whatever, but I mean, like I got to a point cause he was out and he's, you know, a Republican and he's, you know, a gun laws or gun rights proponent, obviously a Second Amendment guy.
Which in that part of the country, especially, is a big deal for the
huge deal. That was the whole point of him being out there. He was out like I was shooting trap with the guy who was running for governor of New York. You know, so it's cool.
It's been a while since New York has had a Republican governor, though. So
yeah, but it was it's really cool as a journalist the opportunities that you get to meet. You know, dignitaries and elected officials. And, you know, you just get to realize that they're just people.
Yeah.
They're just people.
Well, most of them, some of them are lizards.
Yeah. Some of them are lizard people. Some of them are lizard people, which are still people, you know,
like lions is good people.
Like I consider like my cat is a good person. You know, she is so cute.
I don't, by the way, for the record, I don't actually believe that anybody in Washington is technically a lizard.
They might act like it.
They might act like it.
They might act like it, but they're not actually they're lizards. Not they're DNA.
Actually lizards.
Yeah, correct.
I have to specify that because that could get you canceled these days.
It can.
Yeah, I don't actually believe that they're lizard people.
Yeah.
But I love to throw that into conversation with people and like pretend that I believe it.
It's good practice.
Well, you know she's a lizard, right?
Yeah, like she's actually a lizard.
See how? Like, have you seen her blink?
See how?
Like, did you smell her? Have you smelt her?
Did you see her lick her eyeball? Like, she could lick her own eyeball.
I saw her eating a fly.
Yeah. No. Anyway, on that note.
Oh, that's a good place to end, I think, man.
Yeah.
So, hey. Thank you, Kelsey, for sharing so much about grant writing. It was really helpful for me, honestly, because that is a part of our relationship that I haven't really explored yet.
And sure. So
I feel very educated, and I hope our listeners do as well. Thank you guys, you listeners, for tuning in to StratCom Live.
Yes, thank you.
We love you guys, and we appreciate that you guys tune in and pay attention to what we're doing. If you are getting something out of this, if you know somebody who works in a nonprofit who this information would be helpful to them, send them this episode and say, hey, my crazy friends, Josh and Kelsey, when they're not laughing about the Wendy's social media account and telling weird stories, have really good insights on nonprofits, marketing, and nonprofit grant funding. And you should check out this episode. You do that, you're going to make us happy and we'll be friends for life. I promise.
Check out this episode. You just have to kind of sort through the nonsense every now and again.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Thank you very much, guys.
Awesome. Hey, guys, make sure you subscribe, leave a rating, review. Again, tell your friends. We've all got a story to tell.
Let's tell it well.